irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show for you tonight. A very dear friend of mine, we've known each other for quite a while. She was on my show way back in the days of the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, Kathy Lauer. She was on a show I did, Women in Music. And a pretty incredible person and a great guitar player. Besides being a guitar player, and her band is here today that she plays in, she's a good tech, and she builds and designs pedal boards, and we have a couple of those in here too. But tonight we're going to focus on the band that she plays in, Lynette Skynyrd. And as you can tell by the name, they play Lynyrd Skynyrd. They are a tribute band for Lynyrd Skynyrd, all women, all great players. So I want to welcome everybody that's here tonight. We have the leader and the bassist and the founder, Lori Sittis, and we have the three guitar players here. We have Kathy, we have Deanna, and we have Maria. And we have the drummer, Shannon, is here too. So we have pretty much the whole band. And I'm going to play a clip in a minute, and we'll get into what they're doing. I want to talk a little bit about the whole sound and how to play. I mean, it's kind of, people don't realize that it's a lot more difficult to emulate another band like that, to be exact and get the nuances of the band. And I think it's interesting to see how they go about that, because you're looking at tone, the technique and playing the music, and the overall, just the whole, how to arrange it and pull the parts apart and get everybody, you know, three guitar players, that's rare for a band. I mean, they had three in the band, but that's kind of cool. I mean, I've never played in a band with three guitarists, so that's an interesting thing for me. But anyway, I'm going to play a clip. It's called Cottonmouth Country, and set it up a little bit, and then we'll get into, I'm going to have Kathy set it up, and then we'll play it, and then we'll talk a little bit how you record it, because there's some really cool things in terms of equipment that they're using on that. So go ahead and kind of set up the clip.
The clip is Cottonmouth Country, and originally we were this was a song that never made it onto an album for Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was around the time Lynyrd Skynyrd had released Nothing Fancy, approximately about 1974. And the clip, Cottonmouth Country, was actually written by Ronnie, of course, and Ed King. Ed King being the music author of it, and Ronnie being the lyric author. It, for all intents and purposes, it was a living room demo. And, it surfaced on YouTube like a great other things. And one day, Lori and I were listening to it, and Lori was pretty hot to, hey, we got to do this song. It's like
such a great song. It's so weird that they never made that onto an album. And we were like, we need to record this.
Since there was no like real publishing or anything to do with, you just said, "Hey, we'll just do it for fun to that we love the band, saying making a statement." But we had to finish figuring out how the song went. And the unique thing about the song is like on that's on YouTube is actually it was recorded on an analog recorder with the pitch control slightly off, so it was between actually the actual key of E and somewhere between that and F, and we sort of had to kind of tune to it and figure it out and figure out the song. And essentially what we ended up doing was not only figuring out the song but arranging it and finishing it, and so we could actually put it together and record it.
On the original recording, it doesn't, they don't end the song at like they start jamming and you kind of hear this weird like keyboard solo and Ronnie starts going do 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 and then he goes wait cut 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 and then it ends.
And that's all there was. So that's what they gave us to work with. So we just decided we were going to kind of finish it and make an arrangement out of it and record it. And that's what we did. The clip I'm giving you is the guitars that come in where it fades into here is right after that little do-do-do-do, the piano part Lori was just mimicking. But I came up with this dual lead, harmony lead type, which was very reminiscent of Lynyrd Skynyrd at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a crescendo prelude to a slide solo, which a slide solo, of course, was never part of the original intent in there. But being it's Lynyrd Skynyrd and it's Cottonmouth Country, slide sounded like it belonged in there. And so this little dual harmony part that we kind of created is what leads us into the slide solo, and you'll hear that, and then of course it fades out. So
now, was the demo all of them were playing and there was leads in there, or was it like a jam, or was it pretty rough?
It pretty much was just like a riff and rhythm and Ronnie doing and some singing, and there was no leads in there at all. Actually.
For those of you who are curious, you can go on YouTube and type in Lynyrd Skynyrd Cottonmouth Country, and it'll come up, and you'll be able to hear it. And it's just, I mean, whether or not it's a good recording or not, which it's not, it's still a great song and super mm-hmm. cool. And we just really wanted to cover it, even though nobody had ever heard of it.
And didn't Ed end up hearing it?
And Ed King actually ended up hearing it. And he wrote back to us, and he says, "I'm really impressed with what you did with this song. It's like I'd never imagined that." And especially with the arrangement and the leads, I put dobro on there as well, and there's slide throughout. But there's even the very beginning of the song actually has a dobro that we made sound like an old RCA record, you know, playing. And that's what takes the song into the beginning. And you can definitely check out the whole song on, you know, if you look up Lynyrd Skynyrd on YouTube, Cottonmouth Country, you can hear it because we made it available to everybody to listen to.
Yeah, so this is
also you can download it on SoundCloud for free.
Yeah.
So this is an edit. She pulled clips for me.
These are just some of the, I just pulled some of the raw tracks so you could hear the guitar on it and what I was doing.
Okay, let's play this and then we'll get a little bit into what they used and how they got the sound. Here's Cottonmouth. We'll be right back. I love that slide guitar. That's just really cool.
My favorite part of the song.
Now, I had mentioned to everybody before the show, which is interesting, I saw Lynyrd Skynyrd open for The Who, and I think it was the Quadrophenia Tour, so it was around 72. They weren't well known. Their big hit hadn't hit yet. And I remember all these marshals, and they had little half stacks, and they had a bunch of them. And there was one, was the bassist was using a Thunderbird bass, a Gibson Thunderbird long scale.
Fenderbird.
Was it a Fender?
He played a Fenderbird.
Also played a Thunderbird as well. Had both. He had the Fender Bird that Laurie's talking about, which is a cross between a Gibson and a Fender. But he also had a regular Thunderbird as well.
Okay. I'll have to look. I got to find my pictures of them. I did take pictures back. Back then you could take pictures. But I remember one of the guys had a reverse Firebird, and I think the other one, one of them had a Les Paul.
Gary.
I don't think I saw a Strat. I'm trying to remember. It was such a long time ago.
Encyclopedia Kathy.
Yes. But it was interesting. Great sound. Very blues, very bluesy stuff, and great tone. I mean, I remember that. They sounded really, really good.
Their early gear was Marshalls and Fender Twins. That was the secret to their sound. And it was both Alan and Gary that were using Marshalls, 100 watt leads, super leads, and Fender Twins. And I think Leon was using SVTs at the time.
I can't remember what they were using, what the bass amp was, but it was hard to see. I was up close, but I couldn't see. The amps were far back. They moved everything out for The Who. They had a wall of Coliseums and high watts, so you could see everything. But these guys with the half stacks, they were low. You got to remember the stage was pretty high, so I couldn't see over there. I was trying. My pictures, you'll see, it's really low looking up. But speaking of equipment, let's talk a little bit about the sound, because you're really getting the sound that you're getting on Cottonmouth Country is a great tone. So how did you do that? What are you guys using?
Actually, the dual harmony parts were done with my gold top, Les Paul, and actually the SG that I'm holding right now. And I wanted two different tones in it. And I used to, because I wanted them to be different than the slide solo that you're listening to, I used a borrowed early 70s Fender Bandmaster, a silver face. And just turned it all the way up.
For the slide?
For the harmony lead parts.
Oh, for the light, okay.
For the slide parts, I had a 50-watt Marshall, a 71, and I just dimed it, everything. And I was living in an apartment, so I had one of those Demeters silent cabs, and I just put my SM56 in there and turned it all the way up and used my Les Paul for that, my gold top for the slide, and went at it.
Great tone. Great, great tone. So you overdubbed the double leads on that one?
Oh, yeah.
You did
that? Yeah, both of them, yeah. And I had to write the part for it, but I wanted something to create drama as it got to the slide solo. Because
right.
It just kind of lops along, and the harmony kind of takes you in that direction, and it just builds you up, and then you get right to the slide solo, and, you hear this. It's just dripping with sustain, and that's all my gold top there.
Yeah, no, both the double leads and the slide stuff. It's that tone. That's definitely that's awesome.
Skynyrd.
Let me ask you too. Now, Laurie, what were you using on the bass? Because the bass is nice and solid on there.
Well, for all intents and purposes, in full disclosure, I was not the bass player yet. I was the lead singer at that time by default. And so we had a different bassist. And, she was great, really, really good musician. But she was playing like a 5-string Ibanez, and at the time, we were just like, all right, well, it is what it is. But I really didn't, at the time, I felt like that wasn't the right tone. It was just not like really warm enough. But Kathy, in the magic of the studio, was able to really get that bass tone that's necessary for Skynyrd, that really super punchy bottom warm.
So you had to play with it.
We had to do a little surgery to get that.
what amp did she use?
Well, she went direct.
Oh, direct.
But I had we actually reamped it, you know, because we took the direct signal and put it out to an Ampeg flip top and stuff, and just mic'd it with, like, I think we used an RE20 or something to get it, because like Lori says, it just was a little thin, you know. And Lori's tone is great. I mean, she's so old school. I tell her all the time.
Lori, what are you using now?
So right now, you know, I am using an Epiphone Thunderbird, and personally, I really like it better than the Gibson Thunderbirds. It's a little bit lighter for me. For a while, I was using a Yamaha, like an 87 Yamaha, and I had Fender pickups in it. It sounded great, but I really wasn't able to climb up really high on the neck, and that was something that Leon does a lot. He's just like, for a bass player,
right,
he's just like way up there a lot. I mean, just doing those accents and stuff. And you have to have that for like Freebird and that smell. There's just certain ones where you just, it's like, okay, I'm out of frets now. There's no way I can get up any higher. So I really did have to graduate to something that was more similar to what Leon Wilkinson was using at the time. My dream bass is going to be built by Matty Barato out of Burbank. He does a lot of work for us. Amazing, amazing guitar builder. And it will be the Fenderbird, for sure.
That's what I was going to ask her. You have to get a Fenderbird.
I have to. It has to happen. And eventually it will. And I'm really looking forward to that day that I can absolutely emulate Leon perfectly, really get that exact tone. I think I'm pretty dang close right now.
You have the hats for sure.
I definitely have the hats, and it's like, but I think the thing that helps me get the closest to Leon is that I am more. What do you say in this country? I'm just more prone to playing with a pick rather than my fingers, which is and contrary to popular opinion, that's what Leon played. He played with a pick, like 100% of the time. And a lot of people have seen me, and they're like, "What are you playing with a pick for? You should be like, you know, doing like, you know, play like Leon did with the bass with fingers." And I'm like, "That's not Leon. He played with a pick."
Yeah.
And with all those bass chords and stuff, and like really focusing on that chunky, heavy guitar tone, yet clean.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, I had on the show a few months ago, Rick Fox, who plays in, he played in Steeler, and he really loves the Epiphone. And just the people out there, just so you know, one of the real advantages of the Thunderbird, whether it's the Epiphone or Gibson, it's a longer scale. So it gets a deeper tone just because it has a longer string to vibrate. So a lot of the heavy rock players like those basses because of that. Yes, you had to be a little taller. Now, Lori, you got to really stretch to. That's a longer scale bass. But
and
it
a
gets
lot of people say that, like on, they're like, "You're a little girl, and what are you doing with such a big bass?" But it's necessary for this music.
Yes.
I have to. And even, you know, after the plane crash, Leon Wilkinson could not straighten his arm, and they actually had to adjust his bass with like some kind of a sling. And what did they do, Kathy? Help me out here.
Leon started playing his bass where it was like
straight up.
Almost straight up.
Yeah.
Because that was the position his left arm could handle playing. So, and he switched to, I think he was using Padula basses for a while there around the time of the tribute tour, because they just seemed to work better and be more comfortable
for
him.
Was the Padula a shorter scale?
It looked like it was a normal scale bass to me.
Or as long, because Epiphones, I think the closest to an Epiphone, and I don't even think it's as long as a Rickenbacker. That's a long scale. That one has a long, it's a long neck, but I don't think it's quite as long as the Thunderbird.
So, no, I don't think so either.
But. So, but that sound, I mean, I've seen a lot of bands use those, and they're just deep, especially with a pick. Almost everybody I know that plays a Thunderbird usually uses a pick. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's part of that sound.
And that I feel like that was a lot of what was missing initially, is just that attack that Leon had. So I'm just really glad that we have that now. I think that Lynette now is like really has gotten so much closer to the original vintage Skynyrd sound.
Well, that's great.
Well, Kathy has everything to do with that too, because like once she came in and she was just like, no, it has to be like the record. It absolutely there's no winging it. We got to do it exactly like it was written.
No, I agree. Wait. Now, when you get that Fenderbird, you got to bring it in. I want to see that. I want to try it.
Yeah,
I might do a little Who on it because I'm more used to. But no, I got it. You have to bring that in.
You got it. I dream about it at night. I just can't wait.
True guitar player. Yeah. True guitar player. Now, what amps do you use, or what amps are you been using the same, or you been changing?
At the moment, right now, we try to keep it really lean and mean because there's so many people in this band. You've got a 7-piece band, so you know, smaller is better in for this case. So I'm just doing like the Ampeg half cab.
Okay. Which Ampeg head?
I have an Ampeg head, and everybody hates me for it because it weighs like 100 pounds.
So you have the SVT.
I have the SVT.
With the 8606.
In full glory. And you know what? I think that for the Polywog Fest, which we have coming up, I think I'm going to have to go full scale on that. I've got to do, like, the full cab, which is sitting in storage. I don't really use it that much.
The 810 cab. No.
The 810, yeah.
My friend had an SVT with
the refrigerator.
2 8x10s. The sound. It was just the best. I mean, you can't beat an SVT.
One of my favorite bass players of all time was Alan Woody from Government Mule. And when I saw him, he had the two refrigerator cabs, the 810s, and he had the Ampeg SVT head, and he was bi-amping it. He had the SWR together, so he had that beautiful like attack of the solid state with the one little tube in it, and then he had the full-on warm tube thing.
Yes.
And I mean, it was just such a gorgeous sound. If I could have any bass sound, that would be it. It was just encompassing and beautiful, and you could really feel it in your lower nether regions.
Kathy, you're going to have to build a rack system that's bi-amp for her. Just putting that on the list there. But you used a a 4x12 cabinet most? 4x10?
410s right now. Because
is it an Ampeg cabinet? Or is
yes.
It's
the Ampeg cabinet, and then just to power it, I've got the GK because it's just what I've got as far as the tube that's sitting in storage. It's just too powerful for the venues that we're playing right now. However, going forward, we've got some big shows coming up, and we've got a new management agency, Chapel Entertainment, who's going to be bringing us to bigger venues. So I'm going to have to break out those big guns. It's got to happen.
Yeah, no, that's
and
true.
That makes Kathy very happy.
Well, we'll have to.
Anybody want a roadie for us?
Yeah, nobody wants to roadie for us because it's this stuff. Every time I have to use that for a gig, the guys are just, you know, that help us.
They don't call
like,
it the hernia maker for nothing.
Exactly.
But actually, I'm curious. I'll have to have you come down when we test some of the other bass amps that are Class D, because I've noticed they have a warmer sound. They're close, but it's nice to have an amp that's 600 watts RMS and it's like 5 pounds. It is.
I need that.
For me, at my age, it's like, this is very cool. But I'd be curious to see. We'll have to when you get your Fender, but we're going to have to send you down and have, we got to try one of these amps and see what you think. So that should be pretty
cool.
It's
a date.
There you go. Now, let's go down the line here. Might as well go down to everybody's equipment since we're talking about it. Deanna?
Yes?
What are you using?
I am using the good old workhorse Tele Ultra Thin. Actually, a semi-hollow body.
Okay.
It's a reproduction of, I think, 70s. The 70s,
yeah. That's
70s.
When I think those came
thin
out.
Thin line.
Yeah, the thin
lines.
Thin line,
yeah. That, and I love it. It's light. It's crisp. I was playing a Fender combo, like a Deluxe, but I started playing through other amps and I fell in love with, I know it's not, you know, the purest Skinnered thing, but the Mesa Boogie. I have a Lone Star
head
with a 2x12, and
she's a lot pickier than I.
Well,
yeah,
no,
Kathy did a lot of shopping
because, yeah. And I just, yeah, Kathy is my obviously my tone guru.
Well, Mesa Boogie is basically a souped up Fender.
I was really impressed how good it really was.
And I love that it's got the 10, 50, and 100 watts. So
yeah, you can tap it out.
And it's got, so it's got the clean.
No, those are good amps. I mean, and now they make it with, you can get it with the 6L6s, which is more Fendery, or you can get the EL34s. It makes it more of a Marshall. So you can, but they're pretty, you know, when you crank the, when you have the gain stage that amp has, either one, it's pretty close.
It's a good pedal amp.
Yeah,
it is. That's what I noticed when we were shopping, because I really liked what I loved about it was the clean sound, though, too, because, you know, there's a lot of dirt that you can get in the other channel, but I just loved the way my guitar sounded through the clean.
Do you know
channel,
speakers are in there? Is that just a standard?
It's the 39. Isn't it?
She has vintage 30s in it because she has the matching cap. So
okay, so
vintage 30s.
Yeah.
I'm curious if she at some point when you, I know they're not cheap, but to try the golds. Because they get a real glassy sound. I don't know if that's what you want, but that shimmer, like on a Fender, it gets a real clean sound. It'd be interesting to try.
Well,
should experiment with that.
Okay.
That's their gold is a Nalnico, so it's a mellower sound, but it gets that real glassy sound, but it breaks up really nice too. So when you punch it, it goes.
Well, that's what I liked about this, because when I started playing pedals, using the pedals, and I know, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but Skinner, I mean, they didn't use pedals. It was
right.
I didn't see any pedals.
I saw a really long coil cord.
Well,
they're coming out in the front of the stage.
If you saw a pedal at all, you'll see a little orange box on their amps, and that's, of course, an MXR Phase 90. Mm-hmm. You know, and they at one point in their career, they kind of went haywire with it. They were like putting it on a lot of different tunes live, not on the record so much, but you could hear it. And there's a tone secret about that as well too. Those old MXR Phase 90s, even when they're off, they're actually on.
Right,
and that's because of the switch.
True bypass.
There's no true bypass, and it's actually filtering through the circuit board in there, so it's slightly phasing even when it's turned off, and that's with that coupled with their modified PV Maces is part of their tone circa 1976-1977, and it's just as influential on David Gilmour sound and other who were using Phase 90s in that era. So,
they were popular. I remember those in sessions. We used those all the time.
Right, exactly.
Now, we have Deanna's board here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So can you go through it real quick, what she has on here? Kathy's sitting next to it, so
yeah.
She can...
Well,
go ahead.
She, Deanna has a TU-3 Boss tuner, like we all have, you know, all of us have at least a Boss in our arsenal. She really did her homework and a fair amount of shopping when she picked out components. And because, the two main effects that we really use in Lynette in Leonard Skinner is a phase shifter, and she has a phase 90 of the block style, a reissue, and tremolo. And she opted for the Boss TR2 tremolo, which is a great sounding tremolo. It's, you know.
Well, did Skinner have tremolo on their Marshalls, or what did they
on
use?
on the Fender amps on their twins?
So for the, okay,
yeah. So anything you hear with tremolo, like Curtis Lowe is a good example, or
Coming
Home, or I Need You is another classic example. All the rhythm throughout that, the strat is tremolo. So, you know, we're instead of relying on amps, which is not practical these days, especially if we have to do an out-of-town date with a different backline, she opted to put it on the board.
So what's the red pedal?
The red pedal is her gain pedal. And that is a JHS Angry Charlie. And we went through enough of her.
We did.
She played a number of overdrive pedals. And, you know, we both looked at each other and said, that's the one.
Yeah.
That's
but
the
she
tone.
Has a Wampler gain.
Oh, yeah, well, the clean boost.
That's her clean boost. And it also has a buffer circuit into it that she can switch in and out. And she uses them in different combinations for different tones, from clean to slightly overdriven to full on, yeah, for like cry for.
So
the
she, if you when you want to get real a real blowout sound, you use the red one, right?
Yeah, and I also fool around with the gain on the amp too. So
right.
I adjust.
But the Wampler is just basically.
Wampler is a clean boost, but I'll use that like for instance like. The harmonics for Needle in the Spoon. I like them both. I like to have the JHS and the Wampler on at the same time, so that it really gets that shimmery sustain but with enough dirt on it so that it yeah.
And then I think the only other thing is the foot switch for the
is my foot
for
switch.
The amp right
yeah.
Exactly.
Mine's not like the motherboard. Like Kathy's.
Kathy's is huge. We'll get to Kathy's in a minute. But now, Maria, tell us a little bit about... Come on up closer to the mic, but what... row over there. There you go. Tell us a little bit about what you use.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got a Gibson Les Paul Signature. Mm-hmm. It's a 2014 Honeyburst. And it's active, and it's got an option for split pickups if you pull up the knobs. And a 15 dB boost switch.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a Marshall JCM 800 with a 1969 B cabinet. And I currently go through a Boss ME50 for my effects, but I'll be having a chat with Kathy.
Come see the tone doctor.
That's right. Oh, that's cool. So you have the okay. So you're using that with the so you have a 4x12, and your amp, the Deanna's amp is a 212.
212.
But you're able to keep up, no problem. So there's no problem with.
Well, yeah, I just flip that 100 watts on and try and keep up with
them. She could smoke us out.
Oh, okay. No, that's and well, before I get to Kathy's setup, because she uses a lot of different things, I do have to ask Shannon. On these cuts that we just heard, what was the drum set you were using there?
Well, I just started with the band, so I just came on this past month and has just been rehearsing like crazy, and it's been a lot of fun with the ladies here. They're,
so what are you using now?
I'm using a Gretsch custom set. It's a 20-inch bass, 10, 12, and 14 toms, and I use Evans Deep Vintage dry heads. On the toms, Aquarian deep vintage dry, and you use a Evans dry on my snare, which is a pork pie snare, 8.5 deep. So it's a real
very
deep,
nice,
yeah,
nice.
A little deep snare.
It's a wood. It's a wood shell, right?
Wood shell
snare.
Yeah.
Now, what did Leonard Skinner use for drums?
Bob Burns first was a Ludwig player, and Bob Burns was the original drummer. And he, up until he was the drummer through Second Helping, and Artemis Pyle, he was also a Ludwig drummer. But and of course, everybody, Artemis is famous for having two bass drums. Alan Collins used to call them, they sound like machine guns. You know, the Artemis pile like sounded like, you know, a drummer with machine guns being the double kick drummer.
So how do you use one? You have a single kick drum, but do you have a double pedal set up so you can do
DW
the double?
Double.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of drummers now just use the single with the double pedal set up so they can get that sound. Very cool. No, that's a good that. Those Gretches, those are nice. Those are nice.
A sweet set, yeah.
Yeah, it's got the wood sound is very good. Now, let's talk about Kathy's motherboard. It's a big one.
It's purdy.
Well, I've built bigger ones, but it's, you know, it suits what we do here. I use a Gig Rig Quartermaster 8 for my looper. It's true bypass. It just turns the my pedals on my board on and off. If there's nothing on, it just the signal goes right through guitar to amp. And I like that because it gives me convenience. I don't have to step over things. I'd like to mention, too, that the band is actually endorsed by Pedal Train Products. Thank you, Amy. And they've graciously supplied us with the Pedal Train boards that you see here. And, you know, Pedal Train is a wonderful product. The cases and boards, really durable. So to start with, on the right is my Buddha Wah. This is the wah I used on Needle in the Spoon. It's modified slightly to give it more of a Vox, vintage Vox tone and vocal quality to it. I also put a LED so I know it's on, because occasionally when I'm stepping on it, I'll turn it off and it's like, okay, I just screwed up Needle in the Spoon. It's like, moving along to on the top side of it is a Analog Man Beano Boost. It's a treble booster. And usually I have it in the treble boost thing for certain songs. Like On the Hunt would be a great example of it. Mm-hmm. That very high mid-rangey sound. If I want to do that. I don't have it on all the time, just when I want to feel like kicking it on. Next to that is, of course, you know, yes, it is a Klon. It's a real Klon. That stays on all the time. I never took it. It's always on the signal path, no matter what amp I'm using, whatever Badland, it's on right now in your little Marshall. It's kind of the secret to a lot of my tone is the Klon. I posted this board a little while back on Instagram, and I think some guy on there said he called my board pedal porn. So,
well, do me a favor. Turn the Klon off so that we can hear the Marshall direct. So you hear just what the amp's on. So that's just the Marshall by itself. Okay, now put it back in. Definitely gives you a lot of harmonic content and gives you the squawk to it.
It really accentuates the pick attack and the presence. Mm-hmm. You can really hear that pop out no matter what amp I play. It just starts to get a little bit more airy in sounding. And that's I set it up like most Klon users. I turn the gain way down. It's almost non-existent. I tailor the treble control to the room, the place we're playing, whether it's outdoors or indoors, and I really just use the volume control to how much of it I want in the mix, and that's how I use it. It's one of the secrets of the Klon is really its buffer. Output buffer, the way it goes into different amps, how it reacts, and I've never heard a bad sound come out of it in any amp setup. Yeah. Not just 6L6s, but EL34s, 84s, what have you, even solid state.
Yeah, no, it does give a lot of character to your sound.
Next to that is because Tone Zone LA is my pedal board company, is actually a dealer for Decibel 11 products. I believe in this pedal. It's their analog delay, and it really is a great sounding delay. I like it because it's not dark sounding. It allows the character of.
It doesn't deteriorate the. It's not like an Echoplex where it goes blum.
Yeah, and starts, or an old Ibanez or an old Boss where, I mean, those are fantastic analog delays, but they have their thing.
No, I mean, some delay, people that make digital ones purposely shelf it to make it sound like a tape deteriorating.
Right, and besides this, it's also MIDI, and it's also has presets to it, so.
And how long of a delay is it? What's the max on it? Is it like
600 milliseconds? Which is pretty good for an analog delay. But honestly, I use it like a one. I really like to use it as a one trick pony to just double. I don't. There's not a lot of delay stuff in Lynyrd Skynyrd. The only example I can think of my top of the head is Saturday Night Special, the intro to it. It has a slapback going in there. But it's kind of impractical to do that live.
Yeah, there was one clip that you gave me that it sounded like it was doubled, so I presume it's that pedal?
The clip I probably gave you, I actually physically did the doubling.
Okay.
But this is what I like to use it for. You know, so like maybe on Freebird or something, to fatten up that lead or something to come in. I use it very sparingly. Of course, I have a Polytune. Thank you, TC, for making a reliable tuner. Below that is a Lely little dual amp switcher. I typically use two amps when we're playing in town and I'm using my own rig. I love to have two amps. Oftentimes, I'll have them both on at the same time.
So what are you using?
I use, like Maria, I like the JCM split. 800 series. I have the combo version of hers. She's a. You have a 100 watt, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, and mine's a 50. No, it is a 50. Yeah.
Okay.
But I have a combo, and I use a Fender Tone Master. Okay. I really like that combination. And
you usually play them together, or do you switch on?
I usually play them together, and okay. I do a lot with riding my volume knob, like they did.
Okay.
You know, it's like. You know, it's either all or nothing, or little bits in between. Next to that, I have a Mobius. I use sparingly again. Like Deanna has the phase 9 tremolo. This has phase shifting and tremolo on it. So if I need to do phasing or tremolo, it's all in one box, strictly for real estate. You know, it's very convenient for that, and it's Strymon. I mean. Who
can't
doesn't love Strymon?
Yeah.
Next to that, my red JHS pedal is like what hers, like Deanna's, evolved into. It got angrier and became the Andy Timmons. I don't know if there's a Freudian slip in there or not, but I hope not.
So you use it more aggressively.
I use this, honestly, to be honest with you, I rarely ever use this pedal. It's there for if we're on a backline that I'm unfamiliar with, or an amp where I kind of have to go in there clean. Like, let's say the amp I get saddled with on when we're on the road is like a Blackface Fender Twin Reverb that's super clean. That's why I have an Andy Timmons, because it marshals me right up, and that's why I like it. It really gets that Marshall thing in conjunction with the Klon or the other. And next to that is a JHS. It's a custom paint. It's the Prestige. It's just a booster pedal. I mean, if you turn it all the way to the left, it acts like a buffer. And sometimes I use it like that.
Is it as
well.
Clean as the Wampler on her?
No,
on her?
I think hers is cleaner than mine. I think the Wampler actually has more gain, too, than mine. But I use it in right now, and the position is it's a booster. You know,
yeah.
I'm using it as a boost. Again, it's a J chest pedal. It just sounds good. It does its thing. You'll notice a theme in mine. There's a lot of like simple boosting overdrive pedals here. I use the amps, and I push. I just push them. Because that's more traditional Lynyrd Skynyrd,
mm-hmm.
is where it's you're at the edge of breakup, and the harder you hit it, the more you get more sustain and
right.
compression overdrive. I rarely ever use the anti-timbres for distortion. I'm just pushing my amps, and we're trying to get back to that authentic Lynyrd Skynyrd thing. Bring people back to that era.
But now they just dimed their amps up, right?
In those days, yeah, in the early 70s.
They weren't using any of these booster pedals, right?
No, they were just plug in and turn it up.
And then what, you have a little single little...
my amps. It changes channels on my amp. And you'll see in the front of my pedal bar, I have this custom patch bay I made. It has my guitar in, amp out, that jack is actually the jack that goes to the switch channels in either what my Marshall or my Tone Master.
Channel switching in those two amps?
Both amps,
I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you have channel switching too, right, Marianne?
I didn't think the JCM had done that, but...
And I just custom made it because it's nice and tidy and
compact. It's a teeny little guy.
Yeah, right there on the end. Cool. And that's basically my pedal board right there.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Well, actually, show me a little. Play the Buddha a little bit. Just go go through here. It's got that character to it. Now, what did Lynyrd Skynyrd use, a Vox or a Crybaby?
I think on the record, it sounds like a Vox walk to me, but live, it looks like they were using Crybabies. And it looks like somebody went out there right before Needle in the Spoon, put the wall out there for Alan, took it back.
And pulled it away. Well, I can understand it, because they were running around a lot. At least I saw they were moving around. So that thing would have just pulled.
Especially Alan.
There was no pedal boards. I remember that.
No, not in their heyday, no.
Not even Townsend. He had a Super Fuzz sitting there on the floor. He didn't have any pedal board or anything back then. There was nothing like
that. Right, exactly. Yeah, it was a different time.
Those were the days.
No, you had to get tone from volume. Turn it up.
Yeah, turn it up. Crank it up. Well, we're almost out of time. I didn't even get to play the clips, but I'm gonna end with a good clip. But before I do that, let's give everybody information on how to find out what you guys are doing, and give us a little preview of where you guys are playing.
So we're going. The next gig that we have is August 27th, and it's the. Is it really called the Pollywog Festival?
Yes, it's not a festival. It's Concerts in the Park in Manhattan Beach.
Very cool.
At Pollywog Park. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
It's August 27th. We go on at 5.
5 to 7.
2 hours.
It's
set.
A big old picnic. You know, Concerts in the Park. People.
Bring your lawn chairs.
You know.
A blanket.
I don't know. You might not need a blanket in this heat right now.
Well, I mean, to lay on the grass if you want it. Your cooler. Bring your cooler.
That's true.
But.
Any place? What else is going
on? And for those of you in the South who have been waiting to see Lynyrd Skynyrd forever, we're finally going to be doing that in October. This October 20th will be the 40th anniversary of the plane crash, and one of the passengers on that plane, who was Ronnie Van Zandt's best friend, Gene Odom, is going to be having a festival. In recognition of the fallen Freebirds, And we are going to be headlining that, and we're going to be doing a bunch of other shows around that in that section of the South. We've got like a couple of gigs. Nothing is carved in stone except for the Freebird Festival, but you can be looking out for all our dates as soon as we have them. We're going to be posting them on our website at www.lynetteskinnerd.com, and of course our Facebook page. You can find us there, Lynette Skinnerd Band, and that will have all our dates coming up. We're pretty vocal about what we have, but yeah, so that's what we have coming up in the not so distant future.
And you guys have to check out their swag. You've got to get one of these Lynette Skinnerd shirts. These are very cool. I really like this shirt.
Lori does all the graphics, and it's she's
very
just
very nice.
Thank you. And I think that tone and music definitely have a visual aspect too, even though it's, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. It's just like sonically, tones have color and they have a visibility, so I really try to bring that out too, and really give the band a face and an image and a look. And I think that our merch reflects that, and we've got a lot more merch coming up soon.
Very cool.
Some really cool stuff.
And then I also want to mention, for those out there that want to get the Kathy Lauer model pedal board or the Deanna Hirst-Levine pedal board, how can they do that? Tell them about Tone Zone LA.
Well, the quickest way to check us out, of course, is www.tonezonela.com. And there you can find the phone numbers and our email address to get a hold of us. If whatever your project is, small, large, insane, we can do
She's made some. I've seen some of the other pedal boards she made. She knows her stuff. You guys, she'll take what you have and make it work. I mean, though, I'm really jealous about that Klon. That Klon, I'm just staring at it enviously. I got to stop. I'll have to go to confession. Anyway, I want to thank you guys. Obviously, we just ran out of time. I had all these cool clips, and I didn't even get to show the Wawa solo, so that just means you're going to have to come back.
We'd be more than happy to. We'd love to.
And I want that Fender Bird brought in. You got to bring that Fender Bird, and you got to bring your guitar.
Yeah, and because our lead.
I know we can't fit all those JCMs in here, but at least you guys got to bring the guitars down. We'll take a picture of all those guitars because it sounds like your collection's really good. Anyway, I want to thank you guys so much. You're just the best, and I'm glad that you guys finally got to come on the show, and I look forward to having you guys back on. Now I'm going to play set up this clip for me real quick. This song, Poison Whiskey.
Poison Whiskey. It's a cut off our CD, Hot as a Fox Forest Fire. This is classic Lynette Skinnerd. Maria's on this clip too. Maria did the record with us.
Anything special equipment wise?
I think she played my 65 Strat on this tune.
Okay.
So,
what are you playing?
I'm playing my Les Paul. So, okay. And we just blended.
Deanna?
I wasn't in the band yet.
Okay. So this is an early.
This is an early.
This is a deep, deep
vintage.
We do plan on getting back in the studio and recording with this lineup
with Corrine, our lead singer, and because Lori, you'll hear Lori on this.
This is Lori.
What were you using on this one?
Well, I wasn't. Remember, I wasn't the bass player. I was singing.
You were still singing.
I was still the vocalist. So my larynx.
Your larynx.
And these are just classic Marshalls.
Classic Marshalls, dimed.
Classic Marshalls. Yeah.
Dimed?
Oh, of course.
Of course. Nothing like a Marshall at full on. So, everybody, have a great week, and check this out, Poison Whiskey. And, again, Lynette Skinnerd, thank you, guys. You guys are just the best.
Thanks so much,
Jeff.
All right,
thanks.
Here we go. Have a good night, everybody.
out of Kansas City.